Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 291. Welcome back to the show. This week we've got 10 for 10, or 10 questions with 10 sitting worshipful masters. We've got a new master this week, Brother Steve Higdon, and we had a great time with his Q&A session. Before we dive right into the topic, I did want to go ahead and remind everybody that next week, that is this upcoming Saturday, April 29th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Ezekiel Bates Lodge, Ancient Free and Accepted Masons, located at 71 North Main Street in Attleboro, Massachusetts, free and open to everybody, MasonicCon 2017. It's going to be an epic event. We've got Paul C. Smith, Pierce A. Vaughn, Angel Miller, Richard Cassaro, Greg Kaminsky, Oscar Aline, and myself. We're going to be there doing some individual lectures, but additionally, we're going to have something really cool. We're going to have an esoteric symbolism panel discussion. This will feature many of the lecture speakers, as well as a special host moderator, John Ruark. I will also be hanging out with Frater O, so it'll be your chance to meet Frater O. There's going to be wall-to-wall vendors. Like who? Just some people you might recognize. Ryan Flynn, Brothers Blend Coffee, Grip and Word Handmade Haberdashery, the Massachusetts Lodge of Research, Cambridge Masonic Museum, MasonicScarves.com, the Masonic Light Podcast, Madigan's Masonic Trinkets, Third Degree Elements, Scottish Rite Valley of Southern Massachusetts will be there, Masonic Gift Shop, The Craftsman's Apron, Symbology Experts Jay and Michelle Snyder will be there, Alter Ego Clothing Company, Historical Light Podcast, Upon the Point, Masonic Revival. All these are going to be just amazing. Schedule is Greg Kaminsky is going to go on at 9 a.m. to kick it off. He's going to talk about Kabbalah and Freemasonry. You cannot miss it. It's going to be fantastic. I'll come up next at 10 o'clock to 10:45. I'll be talking about colonial Freemasonry, and I'm going to be unveiling some things only for the people who are there in the audience. So we likely will live stream some portion of this, I'm hoping, but for the people who are there, the live stream will actually stop, and the people who are there will get some exclusive content. It's going to be pretty interesting. Angel Miller is talking from 11 to 11:45 on the Masonic Ritual and the Higher Man. Richard Cassaro will be there talking from 12:30 to 1:15 about Masonic secrets encoded in cathedral architecture. And then at 2:15 to 3, there's a little break in between so you can grab some lunch or check out vendors. From 2:15 to 3, George Washington's Bible. Paul Smith will be talking about Masonic music. Oscar Aline will be talking about clandestine masonry. And then, of course, the Master Mason panel on Masonic symbolism. And then at 6:30, the Tall Cedars are going to be performing a degree, and the Nava Muslim Grotto will be putting something on at 7 to 9 p.m. doing the degree, the NEGA semi-annual meeting as well. The esoteric symbolism panel is going to be sponsored by Lyman Cienche, again, moderated by worshipful brother John Ruark of Patriot Lodge 1957. You must present a valid dues card or be a vouched brother to get into this panel. So the panel will be Greg Kaminsky, Right Worshipful Roger Williams, Worshipful Brother Oscar Aline, Brother Aaron Sherman, Right Worshipful Robert Johnson, Frater O, Brother Richard Cassaro, Brother Angel Miller. So again, in order to get into that panel, you're going to need to show a dues card. Please do show up for that. It's going to be fantastic. Again, guys, this is a free event. This happens once a year, and these guys know how to do it. They've been doing it a few years, and they're kind of experts, and I'm really excited to be going. So please come on out. And we're going to kick this week off with a piece by illustrious brother Todd E. Creason. And after that, we will go right into the 10 for 10. So what's the deal with lapel pins? By illustrious brother Todd E. Creason, 33rd degree. Before I begin this piece, I have to say there are some areas in it that I bust out laughing at. Todd has a great way of expressing some good feelings and some great knowledge, but also making us laugh. So what's the deal with lapel pins? My friend William J. Hussey told me a story last October about a friend of his that wore so many Masonic lapel pins on his jacket you couldn't even see his lapels. He even wore them across the back of his collar. One day, he was walking by the pool at his hotel on his way to a meeting, slipped, and fell in. Fortunately, he was able to slip out of his jacket before the weight of the lapel pins took him down to the watery grave. But the jacket was so heavy, they couldn't retrieve it from the bottom of the pool. They finally got it up, but only after they brought in a big crane from a scrapyard, the one with the giant magnet they used to lift old cars into a crusher. Now, Bill Hussey might be a past Grand High Priest of the state of Illinois, but I've known him for a long time. Let's just say, I have good reason to question one or two points of his version of this story. I've never met his friend, but according to Bill Hussey, he's easy to pick out of a crowd. He's the guy with all the rusty pins on his lapel. Like I said, not sure about this story at all. But one thing is true, Masons love lapel pins. More than any other group in existence today, the American Legion running a close second, Grandmasters make them up and hand them out to commemorate their term. Lodges make them up to celebrate special events and anniversaries, and there are appendant body pins, there are officer pins, there are past master pins, there are pins given as service awards. There are pins only given out to Masons that have achieved a certain honor. There are anniversary pins that celebrate a number of years a man has been a Mason. When I was a master of my lodge, I awarded one of those to a 70-year Master Mason. There are lady pins for our wives. There are pins you receive when you give blood at the Masonic Blood Drive. There are pins we give to the Masonic widows. There are pins worn by a Master Mason that has served in the military. Often the most unique and beautiful pins are commissioned and sold to raise money for specific causes, like the Shriners Hospitals or the Scottish Rite Learning Centers. One of my personal favorites is my Midnight Freemasons pin. Brother Robert Johnson had lapel pins made for the original contributors of this blog. Pins come in all sizes, shapes, colors, and designs, and metals. Some are very expensive because they are made from gold, silver, or platinum, but the vast majority of pins aren't worth more than a few dollars. Some Masons only wear one, some wear a few, and others, like Bill Hussey's friend, wear as many pins as they have room for on their lapels to display. And before I start the same kind of controversy and discussion as Brian Shimian and I started with our piece about Masonic rings, points up or points down, let me quickly say that I believe how many pins you wear on your lapel is purely a matter of personal taste. And Masons share pins. Greg Knott and I, Greg is also a Midnight Freemason contributor, joined the Tall Cedars of Lebanon recently in Indianapolis. We had a great time, and afterwards we received pins, and pins, and pins. One of the members there was friends with the current Grandmaster of Tennessee. So Greg and I both have the Grandmaster of Tennessee's pin. Not many Illinois Masons have that particular pin. I know a lot of Masons that when they find an interesting pin, they don't buy just one, they buy two. They keep one, and they save one to give to a friend. I enjoy doing that too. And there are special pins. I remember helping a group of Scottish Rite Masons turn a costume room upside down one time looking for a pin that had been lost. It was a pin that had belonged to a Mason's dad, and had been given to him when he was raised as a Master Mason. We finally found it, too. It was stuck in the sole of one of our shoes. It wasn't gold or silver or platinum. It wasn't worth much at all, just a pin like you can buy any day of the week for $5 from J.P. Luther's catalog. But he was certainly very relieved to have it back. The value of a thing isn't always what it's worth intrinsically. It's what it means to the man who proudly wears it. I don't know exactly when Masonic pins came into fashion amongst Masons, probably about the time pocket watches went out along with Masonic watch chain fobs. But I do know it's a time-honored part of a Mason's uniform, along with the ring. And even the best collector in the world will never own one of each. I've said it many times before, but for a secret society, we sure don't do a very good job at the secret part when we wear so much information about our Masonic affiliations, right on the lapels of our jackets. Toddy Creason, 33rd degree. Alright, everybody, we are back with the 10 for 10 with another sitting worshipful master where we have 10 questions and we put them on the spot and they answer these 10 questions. This week we're lucky enough to have yet another sitting worshipful master. And if you would, worshipful brother, give us your name, your lodge and number, if you have a number on the lodge, and under whose jurisdiction you fall.
Sure, great. My name is Brother Steve Higdon. I'm the sitting master of Anacostia Lodge number 21, in the Grand Lodge of the District of Columbia.
Awesome. It's really cool to have you on. We've not had a worshipful master from the DC area on the show yet, so that is really exciting. So without any further delays, we'll just jump right into the question. A lot of lodges have different versions of what they consider education. Some rely strictly on rituals, some are 5-minute papers, some are just short talk bulletins. But in your eyes, how would you describe successful lodge education?
Sure. So this is something that has been a big focus on my lodge, especially kind of starting last year, and then I've tried to grow it a little more. So in my eyes, a successful lodge education program is just one where someone gets something from it. I know a lot of people like to focus just on the history or just on the ritual. Maybe they'll go through a lecture or something like that as their education piece. And I have done history, but I've also, I pulled up a Masonic poem. You know, I read some stuff from Kipling. Just this last month, I read a poem from Edgar A. Guest called I See You've Traveled Some, which ended up being really good. So it's really anything where the brethren can learn something more about themselves, about the craft, and it doesn't even really have to be Masonic as long as they're getting something out of it.
Yeah, I like that. It is interesting to see the different dynamics, and I like the way you said it doesn't always have to be Masonic, because as we say in Masonry, we make good men better, and how do we do that? And I like that you said that as long as they're getting something out of it, it has that value. Second question, what is the best thing a lodge can do to enhance membership? Not gain, but enhance the existing membership.
See, I really like how you said that, because I feel that we are focused a little bit too much on boosting the roles, gaining members, instead of making it, creating value for the members that we currently have. I was actually talking to our grand lecturer, Right Worshipful Brother Chip Mahaney, about this right before the start of my year. And he said lodges need to have ESP. And ESP stands for education, some sort of social activities, and then propagation. So making new Masons, of course, but having that social interaction and also the education so that they're growing. That was really important to him, and I've kind of adopted that for my own leadership style this year.
Very cool. I like that. What is the hardest part about being the worshipful master?
Oh, geez. So I guess it was really understanding my role. I've been kind of preparing for this year for the last several years. I think I started a folder in my Google Drive called My Year probably 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and just putting little things, and I'll admit, a lot of things came from the Midnight Freemasons. You know, how to run a successful meeting, stuff like that. That's in there.
Yeah.
not to plug cool. your own thing, but
I hear you.
But I've been preparing for a long time, and it just so happened last probably October, so right before our elections in November, I was talking on the Freemasonry IRC channel. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that.
Holy cow, IRC?
Yes. So from the Reddit, the Freemasonry Reddit community has an IRC channel.
That's
amazing.
And
it's mostly IT guys. It's about 80% IT talk, you know, and the rest Masonry. But so anyway, I digress. So I was on there talking about all these awesome things that I was going to do during my year. And I don't even remember who, and I know some of these guys do listen to the podcast, so they'll probably be screaming at their phones or whatever. But so I was talking about all these awesome things I was going to do, and someone just put up a link for Rudyard Kipling's The Palace. And I don't know if you've read this poem, but and I'll make it super short, I promise. But essentially this king says, I'm a king now, I have to build this crazy palace because that's what I'm supposed to do. He starts breaking in the ground and he sees that there's a foundation under where he chooses to build his palace. And on all the stones, it says, after me cometh the builder, tell him I too have known. And he's like, oh, you know, whatever. Some crazy person was etching on the stones or something like that.
Right.
So, but as he's kind of cleaning up and destroying this old foundation, he gets to know the architect that came before him, and it just clicks that he's not supposed to build something new, this crazy, awesome new thing. He's supposed to take what's already there and improve upon it and further that building. So that it kind of you know, kicked me right in the feels right away. And I really wish I knew who put that link in there, because they were really speaking to my heart on that. It's not my job to do all these awesome new things for the lodge. It's my job to further my lodge's vision. And that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And that was going back to your question, that was the biggest thing that I learned this year in fulfilling this role.
Yeah, it's really incredible. You know, as you started to say it and as you did the reveal there, I had this, nobody can see it, obviously, I had this smirk that was just growing on my face. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I mean, that it just makes a whole lot of sense. And I think it will to a lot of the masters that are out there. So definitely thank you for sharing that. We'll put links to that poem and the book that it's in on our show notes. Next question. What is your feeling about fundraising? Should lodges fundraise? Should they not fundraise? What are your feelings?
So this is difficult for me, because a lot of lodges in DC, we have very long-standing investment accounts. Let's just say that. We generally don't have to worry about a building fund or fundraising for lodge operations at all. Any fundraising that's done is for charity. It's not a necessity. It's a kind of a nice to do,
right,
in our jurisdiction, from what I've seen. I've never been to a pancake breakfast. In fact, it's kind of funny. So I listen to all you guys talking about your pancake breakfast and complaining about them, sort of thing.
Right.
I want a pancake breakfast. You know, I've never felt that pain before. I think fundraising is important from a lodge perspective, not for the money, but one of the I visited a lodge in South Carolina, and these guys pass the hat for everything. But I tell you what, they were the closest lodge I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
So I've heard that a poor lodge is a close lodge because they have to go out there and do all that fundraising. So I think it's really good for that, to bring the brethren together behind a common cause.
Where do you see Masonic membership in 10 years? Do you think we're going to stabilize? Do you think we'll get a little smaller, or we'll get bigger? What do you think?
Oh, boy. So I've seen, and you've seen it too, things like the Art of Manliness are popping up, getting super popular. Different shaving, there's stores set up for razors and shaving creams and stuff like that before, where everybody was fine with Barbasol and, you know, the Bic disposables 10 yeah. years ago, right?
Sure.
So I think the younger men of this generation are looking at the past and seeing the value in the things from the past. And I think masonry is one of those. We're seeing that with an uptick of younger members right now. So I don't, I also see that we're doing a lot of Masonic funerals lately. So I think it'll remain stable, but I think the demographic is gonna be much younger.
Sure, I've seen this trend that you're talking about, and I have to agree with you on all of it. I feel like the membership that is coming in is really looking at like the classic man. And I don't know if it's from our dads that didn't join anything, or they were just too, you know, bought into the company, or what happened. But it is an interesting paradigm shift in looking at the way we do today. I mean, I certainly joined the craft looking for a social, almost a antiquated social order, right? And when I found it, it wasn't necessarily like, I guess, antiquated, but it was something that really meant something. And it wasn't just, you know, a thing I sent money into once a year and have a membership card like AAA. This is something that, you know, I do and you live every day, and it becomes a part of you. And I think the modern man today necessarily comes to a point where he asks himself some questions, and sometimes Freemasonry is the answer. Other times, right. Yeah, it's the art of the shave, or it's, you know, the art of manliness. But yeah, I really dig where you're coming from.
Yeah, so I think this generation finds value in quality, whether it's quality in our social circles or even quality in ourselves. And I think that's driving a lot of guys to masonry. It'll be really interesting 5 years from now if masonry is like the hipster thing, because I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I mean, I'm initially from California, and I was going to join Orange Lodge in Orange Circle in Orange, California.
Yep.
And I will tell you that a few years after I joined, the coined term hipster really came out, and I knew exactly who it was. You know, I mean, I had so many friends, And a lot of them, yeah, they all joined lodges, and I just thought, that's crazy. And yeah. I was like, you know what, though? I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, and you hit it on the head with the quality. Progressive lines in lodges, going from junior steward, senior steward, junior deacon, senior warden, master. How do you feel about progressive lines? Are they good? Are they bad? Indifferent? What do you got?
So a piece of me absolutely doesn't like them, just like everybody else, because it's kind of expected that whoever's going to be senior warden is going to be master the next year. That we have elections, but you know, it's kind of one of those things where, I mean, we've basically voted on a slate as long as I've been a member of the lodge, because there hasn't been anything contested.
Sure.
So, but at the same time, now sitting as master, I see the value in the progressive line, because it really does give the membership maybe 8 years to decide whether the person that came in as junior steward is ready to be master, sees their development, and also gives them the opportunity to participate in that development. The past masters can get a junior steward under their belt and start grooming them for master at a very early time, and they know who that's probably going to be.
Right. Now, the listeners are going to bust my chops if I don't chime in on this point and ask you this and just see how you feel. You say they have 8 years to decide on the guy, but like, what happens if that guy is not going to be great and the lodge knows it? Do they let it happen? Or
Well, I get what you're saying, and I really think that's a decision that should be made by the membership. And if they, this is going to sound bad, if they don't have the intestinal fortitude to make that decision, then I think they probably have to live with their inaction.
I will agree with you on that, absolutely. Yeah, you're going to live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword, essentially.
Right. I mean, we really do have elections. I mean, even if they're sometimes a slate election where you just write slate on the piece of paper and that's good enough, everybody moves up, it's still an election, and you can break that up if you really feel that you need to.
So what's the worst part about your lodge? And when I say worst, I don't mean like this is, I've had to explain it to a couple guys, but I don't want them to feel like I'm saying, tell me the worst part about your lodge that just makes you sick every night. No, I mean, what is the part about your lodge you wish would improve? I should probably clean that question up.
I understand. It's not airing dirty laundry, but I think we're working on that with the education. We're working on that with, well, I told you that whole ESP thing. We're working on it with some social events, trying to do some things for charity. I mean, which, again, charity is a byproduct of Masonry, but it also does get brothers together, spending time together, growing closer, which I think has just as much value as whatever you're giving to charity. So we're working on that. You know, it's really tough just in DC in general if you don't have your own building, because most lodges don't, and the rent's really expensive and things like that. So if you want to throw any sort of event, like, you've got to plan this thing out and really commit to the costs associated with it. So it, and aside from that, I heard a statistic a few years ago that 70% of DC Masons don't live in DC.
Wow.
See, all right. So getting guys to come in is a challenge as well, because you've got, you know, Maryland to the north, Virginia to the south, and anything in DC is going to have terrible parking and it's going to be really expensive. So
yeah,
you have
no
to
doubt.
Decide when you're even doing social events, like, hey, let's, you know, meet at the pub or meet for coffee. Are we going to do it in Virginia and ostracize all the Maryland brothers? Are we going to do it in Maryland, ostracize all the Virginia brothers? So that alone, that gets pretty tough.
Yeah,
it really does.
I can see that. What is the ideal role of Grand Lodges?
Oh, that's a good one. So I feel that the role of the Grand Lodge is to enforce standardization between the lodges, and that's just about it. I think that the lodges should still have sovereignty over their lodges, and then if those lodges aren't holding up the quote unquote landmarks or the rules of the jurisdiction, then the Grand Lodges can step in.
I don't think you're alone in that thinking.
I'm kind of a small government kind of guy. If we're not asking for help and we don't outwardly need help, then we'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I got you. I think you're not alone there. I think there's a lot of lodges. We're really lucky. So in the state of Illinois, our Grand Lodge has been, I don't know, since I've been a Mason, it's been pretty amazing. I hear guys cry about Grand Lodge all the time, but they've been members for 30 years, and maybe they remember and they're holding grudges on stuff that they remember from the past. And since I've been a member for like 8-9 years now, Grand Lodge has been pretty fantastic. They've not really done much to upset me anyway. But I've heard stories. I've talked to brothers in Pennsylvania who don't care about the way the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania does things. I've heard from Grand Lodge about Florida. I mean, you hear about it all over, and everybody has their opinions. But I definitely don't think you are alone in your thinking that the Grand Lodge should be enforcing standardization as their goal. I think that's a really good point.
Now, and this is not foot and mouth whatsoever. I'm just blessed. I have 5 living past Grand Masters in my lodge.
Three of them
are active, you know, and the other 2 live in South Carolina, I think. You can't throw a rock anywhere within D.C. city limits and not hit 3 past Grand Masters in the head at some point. Like, that's just the way it is. But it's great.
I mean,
we don't have the whole district deputy, because technically we are a district.
Yep.
You know, so we do get to be really close with our grand line. So that whole kind of big brother sort of, I guess literally big brother feeling that a lot of other jurisdictions have, we don't really get that, because I mean, I go talk to Ken or Roman, you know, it's just, we're really close that way. I've heard that with Utah as well.
I've not ever thought about it that way. You know, in a small district like Columbia, it just feels like, thinking about it, you wouldn't necessarily need like the oversight. So like in Illinois, we got 470 lodges roughly, and 5 districts, and in each district there's 5 areas, and then in each area there's a number of districts, and we've got area grand masters and district deputy grand masters, and then the masters of lodges. And one of the key talking points as a DDGM is to let new members know what the official visit is all about. And so when I go to these lodges and I explain to them that the grand master can't always come to your lodge, you know, he's very busy, so I'm his representation here. And in a nice place like DC, they're right there. You can just talk to them.
Oh yeah, our grand visitation is actually the Grand Master, and probably most of the Grand Line as well, and they hit every lodge up in D.C. It really is a different animal. I went to a district deputy visitation for a Virginia lodge last week or the week before, and it was a really big deal. And I definitely am not downplaying it. I just understand that in order to see the Grand Master in most jurisdictions, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, you know,
that might happen once every 5 years that he might come to the lodge.
That's true.
Or he might come to the district, and then all the lodges meet at that one lodge.
Yep.
So we are really blessed in that.
That's really cool and a really neat dynamic. I'm glad you explained it. There's a lot of guys out there who are going to get some value out of that. What is your biggest fear as a worshipful master?
Oh, geez. I know a lot of guys probably fear that they're not going to have a legacy. I don't have that. At all. I guess it's just, like I said, once I got that whole rude awakening right before the beginning of my year, I guess my biggest fear is that the lodge's vision, either one, my lodge doesn't have a standard vision, or two, that vision isn't being progressed toward. That'd be my biggest fear is worship. Everything else, I can roll with the punches. I mean, you know, guys calling in the day of, that we're doing like a 50-year pin ceremony, and the junior grand warden is showing up, and I've got like 4 guys who call in sick. I can roll with those punches. But as far as the lodge's vision and things like that, and us not moving in that direction and getting stagnant, that's my biggest fear.
So this is your last question. 10 questions go by pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, no, it's really quick.
All right, so here it is. This is from my brother Pablo Columban, Worshipful Master 2017 of Denver Lodge Number 5. And his question for you is, Were there any misconceptions you may have had about sitting in the East before becoming Worshipful Master? And if so, did you have to make adjustments running the lodge? So I know you talked about your expectations, and this kind of touches on that, but if you have any other angles on that.
Sure. So even sitting in the warden's chairs, you didn't see a lot of the extra work and time and communication that goes into being the master outside of lodge night, putting programs together, making sure that you'll get letters from widows and things like that, donating $100, and you gotta, and actually I feel really happy doing it, but I like to write them a letter back thanking them. I have, like I said, I have two grandmasters that are down in South Carolina, and I've written them really hoping that they can come up. So there's a lot of, I guess that's the biggest misconception, is time required as master, and also the juggling at the last minute. I didn't see that when I was a warden, so I'm appreciative of those who came before me, because I didn't see it, and I just hope that I can kind of pass that on to those that are coming after me.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that wraps it up. Worship Brother Steve, can't thank you enough for coming on the program. I know we pushed this back a couple weeks, and I just have to thank you for your flexibility and your schedule. It was really great to have you on the program.
It's a huge pleasure. Long-time listener. Huge pleasure to be on the show, and thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Absolutely. All right, I certainly hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Again, please don't forget to check out MasonicCon at Ezekiel Bates Lodge. If you'd like more information, please go ahead and visit EB, that's Echo Bravo, 1870.org, EB1870.org. Hope to see you all Saturday. We started this episode off with a piece on lapel pins, and that just happens to be one of the primary ways we support this program. If you find it in your heart that you'd like to support this program with the purchase of a lapel pin, please head on over to wcypodcast.com. Hover over the Support the Show tab and click on Buy a Pin. And in this area of the website, you'll be able to buy a lapel pin. You can buy a set of cufflinks. You can buy a money clip or a tie bar. The cufflinks, tie bars, and money clips are very short supply, so keep that in mind. Our lapel pins are $10 and ship anywhere in the United States for $2. And we do ship anywhere in the world, that matter, for an additional, it's $14 to ship basically to the UK or Australia. We used to cover that cost, but it did start to eat into the funds that produce the program. So we did have to start charging for international shipping. The lapel pin is 24 gold plated. It's hard fired colored enamel, and it has a strong butterfly clasp on the back of the pin. The pin is outstanding. It's got a triangular shape alluding to the self, spiritual, and material. It has a red border, which kind of gives a little bit of a tip of the hat to the Holy Royal Arch degrees. The words "Whence came you" are used in the ritual and were the words on my mentor's favorite bumper sticker. The secondary triangle symbolizing the internal, the inside of which is contained all of the other symbols and working tools. Inside man are all the tools we need to build our temporal building. The square and the compasses, as in a ritual, we have the gavel, the setting mole, the plumb line, the all-seeing eye, and also the mind's eye. We have rays of light emanating from the eye, and there are seven of them representing the seven liberal arts and sciences, and the rays are alternating in color, green symbolizing that Masonic education color. We've got the sprigs of acacia and the cipher symbols that represent WCY. There's nothing on it that says podcast. It's just a really nice pin. You can have yours, and you help support this show with your donation of $10. Again, $2 to ship anywhere else. So for $12, and I send them out every week. So in advance, thank you so much for supporting this program. Other ways to support the show, you can, of course, go to onnit.com, and you can pick up any one of the products there. If you go through our website, is the best way to do it. Click through our links, that way they know where to send the donations to. And if you use the promo code WCY, then you also get 10% off shipping. You can also donate via PayPal on our website. It's just straight into the show's fund, which is very helpful. And of course, our great friends over at Bankers Best. So if you go to buybankersbest.com, they have King Solomon's Reserve Beard Oil and Balm. Both are available. And what's really cool about it is it's a recipe specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, black fig and honey. give the tried and trusted formula a rich and luxurious scent that's truly fit for our first Grandmaster. Please check out buybankersbest.com, use the promo code BBWCY357, and 50% of the profits from that product come right back to this show. So thanks ever so much, everybody, for helping support this program and being a producer of Masonic Education. Before we close out, I just want to remind everybody that the ticket sales are going crazy for 300 Freemasonry's Legacy, Freemasonry's Future, June 23rd and June 24th. We're going to have this huge celebration at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. We've got a welcome and short introductions by the TMR hosts, a brief history of the United Grand Lodge of England by Brother Mike Hambrecht. We've got illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison coming out to do a special presentation called The Craftsman's Journey. We'll have lunch. It'll be either a catered or a non-catered option. We are still working out the details on that. We've got breakout discussions, Masonic trivia, a cocktail hour, and of course, a large festive board featuring Mark Tabbert as our keynote speaker over dinner. We'll have some closing remarks by TMR, and of course, that's when the real party starts. Afterglow cocktails are going to start, and we're going to have discussion and fellowship, and it's just going to be fantastic. There are hotels to stay at a discounted rate. You need to check out the Residence Inn at Alexandria Old Town on Duke Street. We've reserved a weekend rate for $159 a night. And you can call the number on the website here and reference the TMR Con room block or book online at the link provided on the website, which is themasonicroundtable.com/300. Scroll to the bottom to get these links going. If you're going to be a vendor and you want to come out, go ahead and email themasonicroundtable@gmail.com. And you can bring wife, spouse, partners. They don't have to be a Mason. This is a non-tiled event. There's going to be lots of big names at this event, and some of which aren't even speaking. They're just coming to hang out and have fun, which will be great. I should note, if you are bringing a spouse, wife, partner, there are not other programs running for them, and all guests have to have a ticket. So if they are coming, they must have a ticket. The attire for the event is going to be business casual for the majority of the day, but we are going to say coat and tie for the dinner on Saturday night. So please, again, head on over to tmr300.eventbrite.com or themasonicroundtable.com/300. Or you can just click through the link on wcypodcast.com for 300 years of Freemasonry celebration right there on the top of the website. And of course, this is a TMR event. What is TMR? The Masonic Roundtable. We go live every Tuesday at 10, 9 central. It's like The View, but with Masonry. So we have four Masons from around the country. A lot of times we have special guests and we talk about all things Freemasonry, and it's a lot of fun. And of course, again, it is recorded live, so you can interact with us. If you are on Twitter, you can send your questions or comments to just hashtag them with the episode name, or you can comment on the Facebook page under the Facebook event page. And last but not least, the Midnight Freemasons. Three articles every week. Mostly, I didn't post last Friday. I do apologize for that. It's coming up on summertime, and some of our writers get a little busy. But normally, we do have three articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. MidnightFreemasons.org. It's the best blog out there. And that's it, guys. So I'll see you at MasonicCon on Saturday. And if not, I'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.